Happy Monday, and thanks for tuning into the Bulwark Mega Monday cast. I'm joined here in studio in Washington by Jonathan V. Last, Molly Jongfast, and remotely, Rick Wilson. Guys, thanks for all making the time.
Jim Swift!
How are you, buddy?
Jim, thanks for having us.
Hey, glad that you're here. So Monday, we just get a good start to the week, and this week is the beginning of CPAC. Has anyone here been to CPAC?
Oh, not more than 25 times.
Rick, when was the last time you went to CPAC?
2016.
That's pretty recent.
Yeah, I think that was the last time I went, too. But I didn't really go in. I just kind of hung at their shitty bars that they have at National Harbor. Jonathan,
oh, my God. That hotel is a train wreck.
Why did they move it from the Marriott? Do either of you guys know why this was?
The Marriott, which one? Because they used to have it.
It used to be up at Wardman Park.
Yeah, it used to be at the Marriott Wardman Park.
When I was a kid, it was in Crystal City in the early aughts.
They had to move it.
Well, briefly there, but it's mostly been at the Shoreham and the Marriott the Wardman Park.
Yeah, and then they moved.
And it started out at the, the first one I went to was at the other big hotel up there on Duponic. I'm gapping on the name now because I'm ancient. But it is a long tradition, as I like to call it. It's the Hillsdale Rumspringa.
You know, I have a totally unsubstantiated theory as to why the conservatives have their events in Maryland and the District of Columbia, and that's with the rise of open carry and conceal and carry and guns. You can't do either of those things easily in the District of Columbia or in Maryland. And I mean, the NRA has become a bigger and bigger part of CPAC.
You know, one of the first times I ever talked to you, Jim, I said, why do you live where you live? And you were like, guns. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I when I moved here out of college in the mid-aughts, I had all of these guns because I came from Missouri, and none of them could be legally owned in the District of Columbia except like a World War I. It's an M9130 Mosin-Nagant bolt-action rifle from the movie Enemy at the Gates.
I mean, Jim, I have two of those.
They're great guns, but that was literally
phenomenal.
It's the only gun I think I own.
That gun get you Rachel Weisz? Take that out to the gun shows. Hey, ladies.
Only if you have like the Vasily Zaitsev authentic scope and you have to fix the bolt too. And that I mean, these guns are like $100. They're really cheap. But the actual scope and the bolt are like probably thousands of dollars.
Lots of words, but I don't know what any of them mean.
The trick about the Mosin is once you're out of ammunition, you can use it as a club to beat your enemy to death because it weighs something like 40 pounds.
Yeah, and it's like 4 feet long. I mean, it's a really cool gun, though. But yeah, so that when I moved here, I couldn't live in either of those places. But open carry was like only sort of an obscure thing in places like Texas and in places in the South. But the NRA kept winning victory after victory in the early 2000s, mid to late 2000s about conceal and carry and open carry. And Virginia is a state where you can open carry. So I can imagine now, I mean, you saw what happened at the 2016 convention with like guys with AK-47s walking around outside of the security zone. I expect that the CPAC people anticipated this and thought maybe guns at CPAC, probably a bad idea. So anyway, CPAC, it's a circus and it's starting this week. Do we have any thoughts on
what we should say? It has always been a circus.
Right.
The fact of the Trumpist takeover of the Republican Party may have changed some of the particulars, but I believe that the seminal article ever written about CPAC was written by Matt Labash like 20 years ago, comparing it to a Star Trek convention.
Yeah.
I believe that the question was, is CPAC more like a Star Wars convention or like the Creature Cantina in the original Star Wars?
Yeah.
Correct.
And so it's always been like that. It's always been our people.
Yeah.
Maybe not your people, Molly, but our people. There's a weird like Comic-Con mixed with like University of Michigan football fervor mixed with debate societies. It's a weird group of people.
If you're looking for a place for both off the books hookups, discussions of libertarian alternative currencies, raving paranoia about Islam, and a variety of these like D-tier grifters in the activist space. It's your Huckleberry. I mean, and you'll notice, you look at the rundowns on CPAC, and for a long time it was like there was a lot more like training of activists and things like that, and talking about like how to break through in your with your message. And now it is, there are literally panels like only the libs.
I was talking with Jonathan Allen last year about CPAC. He's a friend of many of ours.
Love
and
Jonathan.
I was saying that, you know, it, like to JBL's point, it's always been a circus, but it's always kind of been like a Ringling Brothers circus. And now it's like Cirque du Soleil. The contortions are a feature and not a bug. And, you know, it's some bizarre stuff. It's going to be interesting this year. And I think you're right, Rick. It's gone from, you know, the Leadership Institute kind of, which was in and of itself its own grift, but a grift with good ends.
Right.
Yeah. You know, teaching people skills. And now we've kind of gone to the Charlie Kirk Turning Point USA. Here's how you make yourself into a, you know, everyone gets their 15 minutes of fame. Here's how to get yours.
Right.
How to
right.
be Laura Loomer.
Yeah. go up to Minnesota, wear bulletproof vests, and go around looking, you know, for Sharia police.
I was thinking about wearing my my bulletproof vest for this podcast, but I decided it wouldn't have the same impact.
Well, I don't understand why. I mean, so Laura Loomer and
Jacob Wall
are in Minnesota
with Ali Akbar,
right? Harassing.
Oh, because he's not a longtime grift king
and a felon to boot. If I'm
he's
not
20 years old, how has he committed so many felonies at such a young age?
He's like 40.
No, Ali Akbar is. Ali's like near 40. Wool is the guy who, like, the Arizona Department of Financial Institutions like banned him from, because he's always the youngest, right? He was like the youngest hedge fund manager, and then like.
The youngest felon.
I'm not sure he actually got nailed with a felony, but he's like banned from
yeah, but he owes finances. The money too, because there are some people on the internet, and I'm not one of them, who are financial people who know all of the litany of his crimes and have
kind of like a mini Madoff, you know.
Yeah, it's true. It's pretty impressive. It's amazing. But yeah, they were doing a live stream and he was wearing a bulletproof vest because Minnesota is so dangerous, because it's filled with Muslims who want to kill them.
I don't remember who it was, but some retired military guy said, "Dude, I was in Fallujah. Sit the fuck down."
It's amazing that Amy Klobuchar made it this far. How is she still alive? Coming out of that war zone.
Well, I mean, that's why the best
Edina?
Defense.
Have you ever been to Edina?
Hey, best
man.
Best defense is a good offense, and you know those. What are those things that the hot dishes?
So I have a question for you guys. Do we think that, like, the Project Veritas, Turning Point USA type, do they see each other as partners or as rivals?
Ooh,
is it a Sharks and Jets kind of thing, or is it, hey, we're on the same side and we're going to own so many more of the libs? Like, what? Or is it like, hey, there's a finite amount of funding here, one of us is going to get it, let's fight it out?
I think there that the pool of donors to Veritas and to Turning Point very much overlap.
Yeah.
So I think that at some point there can be only one.
Who do you have?
So
who do you got?
I see a point where James
O'Keefe
and,
or Kirk
and Charlie Kirk are having a sword battle in a warehouse somewhere.
They're dipping the gloves in glue and then rolling that into the shatter the broken glass for Kumite.
I mean, you've seen that Tommy Lauren has like attacked Candace Owens, and that's like Fox News versus Turning Point.
But so, do you think part of that is just like professional wrestling?
I think a part of it is that Tommy is an enormous racist.
Well, to your point, she has a tendency to pick out targets who happen to be African American,
right?
And it just keeps
bizarre.
Happening.
Yeah,
but in your great piece for us, you kind of mentioned that Tommy is Trump's heir, in that she's smart enough to keep hitting upwards.
Yeah.
You know, she never punches down; she only punches up to grow the brand.
Right. I mean, it's clout chasing, but which is like my new favorite phenomenon, which is the idea that you find someone who's more famous than you, you fight with them, and then you become exposed to their followers and fans. But what I thought was interesting today was Trump, you know, so Spike Lee had this acceptance speech at the Oscars that was basically like, so not, it was like, please choose love over hate. And Trump was like, he's trolling me. How dare he say? And it was like, it didn't mention Trump. It was like, please don't choose hate. And he was like, that's obviously me. And so Trump has like attacked Spike Lee, which is sort of interesting because he's black. And also because it was a movie. I'm sure he didn't see it, but it was a movie about that had like an Omaha, had some parts of it about Charlottesville and the rise of neo-Nazis. And so I just think it's like fascinating that he is like into this like clout chasing racism kind of Tommy Lawrence.
Do they have New York history together?
Who?
Trump and Spike
and
Lee.
Spike?
Yeah, I mean, they've both been around New York for like 40 years together.
And the,
right?
And the history of that was the Central Park Five.
Right.
Oh, wow. Right. So they've got beef going, you know, back long
where
time.
Trump immediately called for the death penalty and has still to this day never recanted that. To this day, even after they've all been exonerated by DNA evidence.
Crazy.
Didn't he take out a full-page ad in like the New York Times?
He did. Yeah. Calling for the death penalty.
I wonder if he really paid for the ad or if he got someone else to pay for it.
You know, it's Trump's always grifting somebody for something.
Right. Did he ever recant the birth certificate stuff with Obama?
So the campaign at one point issued this very anodyne statement like, the president believes that Donald Trump believes Barack Obama is an American president. Okay. Thanks.
And didn't he declare victory of it? He was like, yep, see, we got him to show it. Like, our campaign worked. We were just asking questions.
Didn't
right?
he promise to donate money or something, like a million?
He promised to donate, like, $10 million to, like, the Black College Fund or something if Obama would do it. It was like, oh, really? How subtle are you, Donald? My goodness.
You know, I think most of us probably here think the White House Correspondents Association dinner is pretty terrible, but the wrestling I'm a Real American with Hulk Hogan troll that Obama did of Trump when he was there was pretty spectacular.
Is the White House Correspondents dinner not happening this year?
They're not having a comedian. They're having a historian.
Oh, right.
So no comedian, no Trump.
No host.
And I assume, I mean, I really think the White House Correspondents Dinner should die, and in the same way that the State of the Union Address should die. And that'll be good. I mean, if the White House Correspondents Dinner becomes so boring that journalists think they're not going to get to meet celebrities there, then people will stop going. And, like, we can start, like, stripping the journalist class of their pretensions, which I'm all for.
And I saw someone on Twitter was saying, I'm not going to the Vanity Fair after party because they're not letting in the New York Times.
Yeah, I saw
because
that,
because the New York Times wrote something mean about Vanity Fair, and I'm not going because that's not the way journalism works. I hate this
guy. You know, it's like the lamest rap beefs of all time.
I also think that's exactly the way journalism works. Is you write something mean about someone and they're pissed off at you and they don't go to your party.
I will say this. Maybe the greatest night of my life was after the White House Correspondents Dinner the year I got into the Bloomberg party as Fred Barnes. I walked up to the lady with the list and she said, and who are you? And I said, hello, I'm Fred Barnes. And she looked at the list and she checked my name off. And standing behind me was Rich Eisen from ESPN, one of the great sports broadcasters of our time. And she said, who are you? And he said, I'm Rich Eisen. And she said, I don't see you on the list. And so I'm on my way into the party and I stopped and I turn around and I come back as Rich is talking with her. And I said, ma'am, don't you know who this is? This is Rich Eisen from ESPN. He is a really big deal. And she looks at me and she goes, he ain't on the list, so he ain't that big a deal. He's not getting in. And I looked at Rich and I sort of shrugged and I said, hey, I'm sorry, bro. I tried. And I just waved as I walked in. And literally as I'm walking in along their red carpet, Harrison Ford is there. And I'm like, hey, Harrison Ford, nice to meet you. I'm Fred Barnes. And it was, the whole night was magic.
We have to party.
That's amazing.
It was the greatest. But now that I don't go to these parties anymore, now I want them to be stopped because I don't want anybody else to ever have the type of magical experiences that I had.
Your fun is over.
Yes. Yes. I have children and I can't have any fun anymore, so neither can you.
But eventually your kids will get old and then you can abandon them and leave them at home alone.
Yeah, but then I won't be able to enjoy it anymore.
No, you might.
You'll be worrying about what the kids are doing
Molly,
in college.
Are you really going to leave Darwin home alone?
Oh, my God. That kid is such a nightmare.
How old are yours?
I have a 15-year-old who's incredibly woke teenage son, who's so woke that I don't understand his Instagram. Like, I was like, he did a whole Instagram post on Jeb Bush. And I was like, I don't understand what this is about. It is the glorious leader of the revolution. The Jeb Bush is going to lead the revolution, the socialist revolution.
Is that his real Instagram, though, or his Finstagram that he does just for you? So that the only, you know, the fake Instagram that you give to mom and dad, so they can then, but then the real Instagram is like the crazy stuff, the champagne room stuff.
The other ones where he's wearing a MAGA hat, smoking a cigar.
With
a shirt on that says, Cohen is my homeboy.
At the Spearmint Rhino.
Right.
That's amazing. No, but we had a big model Congress tournament this weekend. So,
oh boy.
And he was on the Supreme Court committee. So, and he had a really bad cough. So he kept joking that he was the RBG of the committee.
So he wasn't actually there then.
Then he was sick and then he didn't know how much longer he had to live.
That's very dark for a 15-year-old.
Very dark, yeah, well.
All right, so 15, and what are the other two?
And then I have two 11-year-olds, twins.
Oh, you have twins?
Yeah.
How was that?
It's fine. I mean, I'm like very checked out. So it seems fine to me. I mean, I'm not such a good mother, but I'm much better parent than my parents were to me. And that's really
that's all that matters. As long as you can beat your own parents.
It's true. I have my parents. I say to my kids all the time, I'm like, you wouldn't last one day in my childhood. I was like, you would die. I was like, and especially because I grew up in like 80s New York, where it was like every day you get mugged. Like, I remember.
It was Escape from New York.
Right.
Cocaine everywhere.
Well, cocaine, that was later. But you didn't get cocaine in like nursery. Had I had it in nursery school. But they used to give you money for when you got mugged. Like, they were like,
this is your mugging money?
Right. When you get mugged, not if, but when. Here's the money you give them. So you have this money for when you. And I was like, seems awfully dark. But yes, they did. So it was pretty sketchy.
So we're going to transition. Rick, over the weekend, you were on a show called Bill Maher. And apparently there were some interesting things that went on. Do you care to share with the class?
You and Bernard-Henri Lévy?
You know, anytime you bring a French philosopher on your TV show, he's going to run his game. And he does love to speak.
He's on this 21-city tour in America because I saw him too. And I just wonder, is America ready? Like, is Illinois, you know, is like Chicago, is Boise ready for a French philosopher?
Just stick to St. Louis and, you know, parts of the Louisiana Purchase Territory.
He's got a lot of chest hair.
And he's buttoned his shirt all the way up, right?
He does that now?
No, he didn't. In fact, the shirt he was wearing, I noticed this. I was kind of across the table. I was kind of fascinated by this. There was no button above the nipple level.
Yes.
Like, not just the
full hassle off
button. There were no buttons.
You know, he reminds me of one of my college professors, who is this Frenchman named Dr. Jean-Robert Le Gaffeyou, who was my international terrorism professor. And it was the same thing. It was just like right above the nipples, no buttons, and it was just like hair coming out. And you just couldn't – I mean, aside from his accent and whatnot, which was sometimes hard to understand, you literally weren't learning anything about terrorism. It was just – you were mesmerized. It was just like, can't you button that up, man?
No, it was the show itself was interesting because I was on with Donna Brazile and Claire McCaskill, who basically represent the woke side of the Democratic Party and the Hillary side of the Democratic Party, which is fascinating because Claire's side is completely out of fashion and yet they won for 20 years.
Yeah.
And Donna's side is now the rising tide of wokeness, and you got to wonder, and it's like, of course we're going to run on climate change, gun control, and abortion. Everyone loves those issues.
But Claire McCaskill is pragmatic, and we have won some of the middle. I mean, you and I are constantly having this argument, but we have won some of the middle with candidates like that.
Oh, I'm not. Listen, I'm drawing that broadly, but I will say this. I mean, Claire lost her race because Missouri is a Trump fanatic, super red Midwest state.
Yeah.
End of discussion, you know. But what she was trying to say during this thing I thought was relevant, and it got lost in the shuffle a little bit, which is, you know, you have to win outside of California, Washington, Oregon, New York, and Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And what are the four states that the Democrats are going to go into, you know, where they've got to win, they've got to compete, they've got to go win four of these six states, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Virginia.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are all states that are like more complicated. And I think Claire was trying to get to that. But I think it represented something inside the Democratic Party that they just don't. There's a block in their heads right now that's like, well, we've just got to make sure that we get the Green New Deal out as a centerpiece of our campaign. Yay.
She is really, I thought Claire McCaskill has a lot to teach the Democratic Party, even though she didn't win her re-election.
Well, she might have lost earlier if the Republicans didn't constantly like put forward like dumb candidates who made, you know, stupid tactical errors that she was able to capitalize on.
You know, if you look back at the moment where I got some of my first apostate cred, when they named what's his name, Murdoch, was it Murdoch?
Todd Akin.
Akin. When they named Akin, and I wrote this op-ed somewhere, I can't remember where now. It was basically like, there is no goddamn adult supervision in this party. If you nominate an idiot like this, and I had a lot of Tea Party types who were like, well, you're not, Fox News likes him. What's wrong with you, libtard shill?
He's got 17 children and he plays the guitar and he's a Christian.
Right.
And I mean, I remember I lived out there when he was a congressman, but he shouldn't have won. And there were much stronger candidates. And if I were McCaskill, I'd be like, hell yeah, six more years. it was just a walk in the park for her. Wasn't there some sort of strange controversy that also happened on the show this weekend, a slip of the tongue?
There was a little moment where, and I think this is like, I'm going to ascribe it to
English
skills, where it sounded like for a moment that he was equating homosexuality with pedophilia when we were talking about the Catholic Church. And there was one of those moments where I think like Bill and I looked, made eye contact. It was like the cartoon eye popping.
Do you want to go after this? And then what really did the news cycle was the Wolfgang Puck Chef Boyardee thing.
It's funny because he has had so many very smart monologues with very interesting points. And I mean, I didn't find that point. It's interesting to me what the conservative media chooses to get so worked up about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like they get furious about, like, for example, this weekend, Will Somer at The Beast wrote this piece about the QAnon pastry chef.
Right.
And these people from the conservative media were like, how dare you?
This is a private citizen,
right,
Molly.
Right. I was like, I mean, it was like they clearly know that outrage is something that the left does.
Yeah.
They clearly,
let me
like,
tell you, if she was a member of Antifa, they would be losing their goddamn minds.
I think it's a big deal. And I mean, I didn't like, you know, stick my neck out too far on Twitter. I'm going to do it in our subscriber only newsletter today, which you can subscribe to on our website, Jonathan Last, every morning, Monday through Friday, and me in the afternoons. But I think it's a big deal. It's newsworthy for a variety of reasons. One, who is her boss? The president of the United States. Two, where does she work? Mar-a-Lago, something that President Trump has called the Southern White House. And he goes there and he's been there like, I don't know, 100 times or so. I mean, in the 2 years he's been in office. And she's a pastry chef, meaning that she has like physical proximity and access to the president of the United States, to his staff, to the world leaders and U.S. leaders he brings. And she's making food. And QAnon people are batshit crazy.
But also, she's making QAnon gingerbread houses.
Yes.
I mean, there's like, it's almost like she is like popularizing this terrifying cult. I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's bizarre.
It matters. I mean, if you look at all of the crazy shit that QAnon people have done, whether it's shooting up Comet Ping Pong, which is a restaurant here in D.C., trying to burn it down, the guy who was like on the Hoover Dam in an armored truck with a rifle, you know, I mean, these QAnon people are basically believing in like some mythical anonymous cult leader. And if that guy now, you know, found out that he had some access at Mar-a-Lago, it could be like, you know, you need to poison somebody.
Does anyone think there's a connection between, I don't know what the journalism here is or who's working on that, but I have heard that people think there's some nefarious connection between the White House and QAnon.
Well,
I'll let Rick speak to that.
I have a theory of the case. And that the person in the White House who is constantly in that space of 4chan and Gab and Vote and all these other scumbag places is Dan Scavino.
Yeah.
And Dan Scavino is dumber than a bag of hair, but he has a certain feral instinct for what motivates the peppy crowd and the conspiracy crowd and the Fox crowd. I suspect whoever the QAnon grift team is, and there's some theories out there on that. It's a separate story. That's a separate podcast. I suspect Scavino is the one who leaks them the occasional like weird photograph from behind the scenes or whatever. That's my theory of the case. And he may not even know who it is, but he likes the chaos. They like the conspiracy theory stuff. It always helps them.
It has to be. And I also think because occasionally you'll see Ivanka like make a nod to sex trafficking. Like there's clearly some I believe there's some. They're trying to play it.
Hey, well, the bust is real. They got Robert Kraft. Q predicted this. It's the massive pedophile sex ring. I mean, it's Trump's on top of this.
By the way, it was about 26 days ago or 24 days ago that QAnon said within 30 days the arrest will finally begin. So I'll see y'all on Saturday in Gitmo.
Was it Hugh Hewitt? One of those people was defending. No, it was the CNN Hugh Hewitt. With the
Michael Smirkanish,
right, was saying that it was like unfair to prosecute him. Kraft.
I like how Michael Smirkanish is the CNN Hugh Hewitt,
but he kind of is, right? I mean,
how is it unfair to prosecute him?
Well, because
he got busted soliciting sex from a sex slave in a prison brothel.
Was it because he's a widow and that should make us feel sad?
He's an old man. Visiting a strip mall prostitute. By the way,
he'll go to jail. He'll just lose the test. Hasn't he suffered enough? He's a mega millionaire who has to go to strip mall suburban prostitute.
He's a millionaire with several Super Bowl wins and a professional football team under his belt and a private jet.
If this is all he can get in terms of paying for strange, like something's gone terribly wrong with the free market.
Consensual at vegashooker.com and fly someone out?
Yeah. Why can we just talk? I mean, I don't want to get too in the weeds here, but there have to be better options than a strip mall prostitute, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's got a ring in the Kremlin. I mean, he could get a Russian bride really easily. Duh. Vlad owes him.
That's not
they
without
email
problems.
Me every day. I mean, they're out there.
Yeah, no, there are better options. And, you know, it's the stupidity of this sort of stuff. But I don't think he's going to jail. He's probably just going to lose the team.
No, he's going to get a fine from the NFL. And he's going to have to make some, you know, shit-eating statement. And he's going to have to commit to, like, fund a couple $1 million for anti-sex trafficking efforts. And he's going to get a misdemeanor slap in Florida, which is basically like a speeding ticket for his dick.
Yeah, I just have a Harmy Kraft swings a really big bat within the NFL owners group. I'd be shocked if they force him to sell.
Well, I mean, he'll become Secretary of Commerce after Wilbur Ross leaves. You know,
when will Wilbur? How is Wilbur Ross still there?
He's a survivor.
Are you sure he's alive? It's not Robo Ross.
Who do you think is who do you think is like in the end when this is all over? Who will turn out to be more corrupt, Wilbur Ross, Mnuchin, or Larry?
Oh, Wilbur by a mile.
Yeah, right.
Wilbur by a mile. Remember, Wilbur was a bottom feeder, kind of buy and burn investor for a long time. He's got an eye for he is all about the cash. And I mean Mnuchin, you know, his wife may look like a supervillain, but he's kind of a dork.
Right.
And I don't think he's as fully, you know, I don't think he feels the same like weird venality that Wilbur is like clearly driven by. And Larry's just happy to have a gig.
I feel like Larry is like, you see him, Larry Kudlow, and he looks like he's in Gitmo. Like, every time you see him, you think, like, Trump is literally killing this man. Like, every time I see him, he looks, like less healthy, and, like, Trumpism is literally killing him.
No, hopefully not. I mean, I used to love Larry Kudlow. I mean, until he...
Yeah, no, I always got along well with him over the years. And which is why I, like... As funny as some people think the whole Coke stuff is, I don't really make many jokes about that because, you know, Kudlow he was a guy who was around for the Reagan era, and he was one of the early warriors. But like everybody in my theory of the case, you know, he gets around Trump and things that Larry Kudlow would have like spit on the floor 20 years ago if you said, "Hey, let's have a trade war with China," he would have laughed his ass off. But now that's par for the course.
Is the trade war happening?
It's on a temporary delay because he's meeting with Xi and he's hopeful that like they can negotiate it out. And that leads us to this morning's presidential daily briefing with DJ TJ, Donald J. Trump Jr., talking about Trump's trip to Asia and meeting with he's going to China and is all Vietnam and is
Vietnam.
Finally,
and that's where dear leader is final. And that's where dear leader is taking the train to him. I mean, he's got his own Green New Deal,
36 mile an hour train.
Yeah. High speed, like the Ohio High Speed Rail. And this morning on Fox and Friends, Donald Trump Jr. was talking about the Democrats. And do they hate Trump more than they love America? Because can anyone here guess who the House Democrats are bringing by for an interview?
The president's lawyer, longtime lawyer?
Michael Cohen!
You mean his minister of sleaze?
Yes. Trump Jr. on the show was saying that they're bringing a convicted felon and liar. You know, like lying is a bad thing to these folks. But this is all just a big distraction trying to tear down Trump. But yeah, so the trade war's on hold. Ish until,
but there's 20% tariffs.
Yes,
still.
Yeah, it's not like totally paused. The second
the escalation is paused.
Yes,
but they're still right. killing the soybean.
Did you notice that piece about the soybean thing where they were beating their chests on Friday, like we're gonna China's agreed now to buy $10 billion more dollars in soybeans. Well, yeah, after we've already cut off $25 billion of profit from our soybean farmers. Oh, that's great. It's like, hey, I burned down your house, but I'm going to paint the rest of the, I'm going to paint the shed out back.
Yeah, it's, and you know, these markets are not so dynamic where, you know, I'm not an agriculture economist, but you don't just, you know, oh, here are the soybeans you ordered. I mean, these things are decided by futures and planned months in advance with, you know, crop yields and weather and all this other sort of stuff. Once China finds a new supplier, it's kind of hard to go back. I mean, they're not going to replace it. I mean, the damage, even if we get rid of the soybean trade war and Trump is a big victor in making trade more fair, our soybean farmers are probably going to have to find other markets for this stuff or find something else to grow.
Yeah, yeah.
The damage is done. But just back to Junior for a second. Because I was watching Junior's Instagram during the Oscars, and you've never seen someone so, like, he was so offended before the thing had even started. You know,
he's such a try-hard for that cultural warrior class.
And he's, go on.
It's like, the guy is the, well, I mean, first off, set aside the fact that he looks like a time traveler from 1987 with that much hair product. He is like this built in a laboratory outrage machine now to stroke what conservatism has turned into for these guys, which is I'm mad at the media and the culture and Hollywood. Fuck Hollywood. I want to go to their prom anyway.
It's interesting to me, though, like they were it was like the whole night was super offensive to Trump and Junior before it even started. Like, and I almost wondered if it was like the Junior really knew he would never be accepted in this cultural class. And so he just wanted to tear the whole thing down even before it had started.
Well, I think that, I mean, Republicans have always played the Hollywood elites versus us sort of thing. And, you know, the stakes have been raised under Trump. I mean, Hollywood elites always hated George W. Bush. They always hated Republicans.
Of course, they were Reagan.
Well, I mean, but the attacks weren't like this because George W. Bush wasn't like Trump.
Right.
So they just kind of anticipate this, like, you know, some people plan podcasts and like, you know, parties and popcorn around the Oscars. I think that like the White House media team says this is where we can get a lot of free outrage clicks and cater to the base because that's what we always do. It's like the Super Bowl of outrage.
Exactly.
But they were ready for Spike Lee. I thought it was interesting because I felt like people didn't play into that. And most of the people who spoke, even though there was a lot of wins for it was interesting because like African-American women have done like always very, very poorly in the Oscars because the system is so rigged against them. And so last night there were two, like I read a statistic that it was like two of the three, I don't know, African-American women who had won for costume and for sets it happened last night. Like, it's a very small group. And so there were all these kind of like amazing moments last night, and especially that moment where Spike Lee is hugging what's his name, who also went
Bryan Singer.
Sorry,
who also went to Morehouse with him, and they were like hugging and weeping on stage because these are like these two black men, and Spike Lee has been passed over again and again and again for Oscars and has done like a ton of really amazing movies. And it was like this, it was a meaningful moment to me, and I'm not black, but it was like this
really?
Moment of being being like, you know, of like
can't
this
be friends anymore.
And then Trump just got enraged.
Well,
you know,
I didn't really watch it. I went down to watch hockey with one of my neighbors, but I did see at the very beginning. I had two tweets about this. One was DC based chef Jose Andre was there, and you know, I joked, "What Oscar is he going to win?" But that you know, with his lawsuit with Trump in the hotel, was clearly. I mean, he's done. Jose Andre is a great American. Has done amazing things, but. For Trump, I mean, hashtag triggered, right? and then Marie Kondo was there.
Yes.
Not to trigger Trump, but I was hoping that she was there to get rid of all the categories that don't bring us joy.
Do these categories spark joy?
Speaking of cults,
I don't want to throw out all my stuff.
I was going to do my anime voice, but my throat's so shot right now from talking all weekend. I can't.
Our alt-right audience would have loved that. Glowing eyes and all. Does anyone have anything else for the good of the order before we wrap up the Monday Megacast?
Wrap it up.
Okay. Well, thank you all for listening. Charlie Sykes will be back tomorrow to do this all over again. Thanks for listening.